Good morning.
Good morning.
So I have been talking about case 43 of the Blue Cliff Record, Chozan Ryokai, who was the founder of the Soto School in China. And case 43 is called No Cold, No Heat. And I'm going to read it along with Secho's verse. Secho compiled the 100 cases of the Blue Cliff Record. So a monk said to Tozan, "Cold and heat descend upon us. How can we avoid them?" Tozan said, "Why don't you go where there is no cold and heat?" The monk said, "Where is the place where there is no cold or heat?" Tozan said, "When cold, let it be so cold that it kills you. When hot, let it be so hot that it kills you." And Secho's verse is, "A helping hand, but still a thousand fathom cliff. Sho and Hen, no arbitrary distinction here. The ancient emerald palace shines in the bright moonlight. Clever Conroe climbs the steps and finds it empty." So cold and heat are different for all of us. And in my life, I see cold as on the horizon, inevitably coming forward. It's like the clock that will not stop ticking. And heat is the situation of my life that is so difficult that I have to practice with. And practice is how I face what comes before me and what arises within me. So I thought I would talk about my practice here now. And how I deal with the difficulty of my particular situation, which I've described before as having Parkinson's disease and the way it manifests. And the daily surprise when something changes, and the challenge to adjust, which requires flexibility and letting go so as to be able to be flexible. One of the images in this koan is the thousand fathom cliff. And I see that as different for me in every day and in every moment, depending on what is happening and how long the moment is. I have wondered at times how the moment could be so long and also so short, and the speed at which things enter into my life seems to determine that. So the present moment is the one that I'm in here with you, and I'm presently experiencing all of you listening to me and thinking, all of you are minds that are listening, and I am speaking into all of you, into your mind, and in some way we are together as one. And that practice of being with is letting it be so cold it kills you. Because to do that is to let go of my separate self. And when my separate self disappears, there isn't anything standing between us. The distinctions that we all have that make us unique. And it's taken me a long time to open that door to allow for the differences that tend to create separation. I am going to have to drink a lot of water. So I have sat on the other side most of the years I've come here, listening to who was sitting here and feeling separate. And I was the audience. And the speaker had the job of directing my attention. So I wanted to share with you what Zazen is like for me, because it's a little peculiar, and explain a little bit about why I do Zazen the way I do it. Over the years, while I have been practicing with Parkinson's, I have had, as you know, difficult time sitting still and sitting up straight. And I discovered one day that my breath had a almost a power to bring me into the center of the thing that I was trying to avoid or fix. And how that works was something that I started to explore by staying very close to my breathing and paying close attention to what my mind would do in response to disturbance, and particularly thought. If I thought words, if conversations started to arise in my mind, my tremor would ramp up and the frequency would increase. And I didn't realize the connection for a very long time because I thought I could freely wander in and out of thinking and do Zazen at the same time. And the words "think not thinking" kept arising in my head, that to pay attention to what is happening, when I'm not thinking. Words. And everything would calm down to a tolerable degree if I just let the words pass by and become distant. And the way I did that was I became my breath. And I did that by exhaling and holding my breath for just a little bit and letting my body release at the bottom of that breath. And at that bottom was a pause, and it was a deliberate pause. There's normally a pause there, but this pause allowed for everything in my body to stop for a moment. The tremor stopped, the pain stopped, the movement, just for a second. And then I let everything go, and the air just whooshed back in. And I breathed in, and it all came back. And I thought, well, I had a second of harmony. And then chaos arose. And I did the same thing again and took a second breath. And I exhaled and paused and let everything go. And it all stopped. And then I let all that air come back in. And all the chaos came back. That was two breaths. I did that over and over and over again, and noticed in the process over time there was a linking up of energy from my breath that created a sense of harmony that was in motion. I was still moving around slightly, but a deep rested feeling of no conflict, no struggle, and faith arose because I could count on my breath so long as I was alive. It would keep on going, and I could track with it. But it did mean that I couldn't daydream. And so I practiced not daydreaming, not going to storytelling while I was doing Zazen, because it was torture to do that. My body would react so strongly to it that I was highly motivated to follow my breath. Our very early Zazen instruction is to follow the breath. And sit still, maintain posture, and that's pretty much all I did. The maintaining of the posture was a little squirrely for me. So I experimented with ways to stay afloat in the real world. And I was so happy when I discovered that I could be still that way, in the center of breathing, that it gave me great encouragement. And I realized that when Tozan says, essentially to allow the heat and the cold to penetrate, to be thoroughly hot and thoroughly cold, he means to enter into your center, the center, and let the experience be total. And make total contact with what is happening. So I made total contact with my disturbance. And it didn't go away, but I found a way which I never really thought was had the power that it has, to just simply follow the breath, be with the breath, become one with the breath, and just breathe. Sit up straight, sit on a cushion or a chair, and be still, and just be the ocean, like waves coming in and going out. And so that's what I was experiencing yesterday in Zazen. And this morning, same thing to greater or lesser degree, since I have been preparing for this day and find myself find it difficult to prepare for similar reasons that I find it difficult to think during Zazen. I have to lay horizontal to do any serious mental work. So I figured I'll just tell you what my practice is like now and how it relates to this koan, and how this koan has affected me. Tozan tells the monk that inquires, asks him why he doesn't go to the place where there is no cold or heat, which would be like to say, go to the place where you don't have any problems. Go to the place where there is enlightenment, or go to the place where you achieve fulfillment. But to go to the place means to leave the place, and this is something of a catch. The monk asks where that place is. And that's when Tozan gives him the helping hand and basically points to the cliff. And the cliff is the thing that the monk does not want to face, and it's the thing that I don't want to face. Because over the edge, the monk looks over the edge and sees tigers and rhinoceroses. I don't know the significance of the rhinoceros, and I will find it out. But it is the abyss, and it is scary to the monk because it implies death. And the question in this koan is exactly what is that? It is the thing that creates fear. It is facing what you don't know, and it is dark. So Setjo makes a comment that says, a helping hand, but still a thousand fathom cliff. So this is meant to help the monk take that step and trust in what would be, what would we would call Buddha nature, or the real, what is reality in a deep sense, reality that has no beginning and no end, no birth, no death. How do you meet that or experience it? The monk has been chasing it all his life. He has heard that there is liberation, and that he could find it. And he finds Tozan, who is an enlightened teacher, who knows what he's looking for. So, in my life, in searching and skirting around that cliff, I finally got cornered and could not escape. And not being able to escape, I, in desperation, really threw myself into the practice, because this was all there is for me, in terms of escape. And I realized that you could try to escape through this practice, and if you have a good teacher, he will point that out. So in my intellectual endeavors, which I have been bringing to Sojin every day this week, my questions and my tendency to get it all down in my head so that I know, Sojin has been pointing me away from doing that. And I have always felt secure in knowledge and realized that I have been delinquent in my studies, and consequently I've fallen behind in my ability to, you know, respond in the Buddhist way with wonderful discourse. And I was a little afraid of having to talk, because I felt really like I wasn't going to be able to pull it off. And then I just went back to practice and thought, well, I'll just talk about that and my life. And we all have this structure of a life that is challenging in some way. So I didn't think that when you fall off the cliff, there would be no ground forever. I thought you'd hit ground eventually. But in the abyss, you don't hit ground. You just step out into the unknown, and then you don't know. And whatever arises, if anything does, and it always has for me so far, I can meet it just then at the moment. So preparing became less necessary, less preparation, and more being present, and especially with this body that I walk around in, I found that my attention had to make it all the way down to my feet, to the bottoms of my feet, because I have one leg that doesn't track with the other one totally. So one day I fell in the intersection of Fremont and Market Street, right smack in the middle of the intersection, with cabs coming around and buses coming in. It was such a wake-up call. And I wondered, what was I doing? And I was daydreaming while I was walking, which is something I can do when I'm walking. So I started paying attention to my feet. And a lot of what I do when I'm moving around is being aware of my body and my feet touching the ground, because I can't get ahead of myself or fall behind. So I try to stay centered in my body while I'm traveling. I do that when I'm driving. I try to stay right there with it. And that's the same thing I do in Zazen. So that is an ongoing practice, because I am always falling out of that center for one reason or another. And the call is to come back. It's my body now talks to me. It says, where are you? And if you're not here, merged with me, then we are going to have an accident. So body and mind are really a whole one thing moving through the world. And everyone I meet is doing the same thing to one degree or another. I mean, we're meeting, and we're with our body, or we're up there in the head, separate from the body. So there is no safe place outside of the present. And Chozan is asking the monk to trust that, to trust in the universe, which is presently arising all the time. And how do you build faith in what has no ground? How do you build faith in trusting what you don't know? And I found that to just go forth and see what happens, is not so bad. I have narrowed my field of exploration to my immediate environment for the most part, and brought my attention to the world around me. And think that there's plenty here to pay attention to and to be engaged with. So the scary place is still yet to come. All the scary places I've gone through are not scary anymore. But there's more to come that I'm now realizing it's a never-ending process of facing a new cliff, a new challenge, a new day, and it won't ever be the same. And what has one thing I wanted to mention was that even though there is pain and problems like family problems or death of friends or people that you care about, it is okay to feel all of that and be attached and let go when you have thoroughly experienced the whole event. I recently lost a friend who had metastatic breast cancer, and it was really she died very quickly. She started dying one day, and 4 days later she was gone, which I happen to have been wide open for this experience. She was came to Berkeley Zen Center looking for a Zen priest, and I was available, and so I went to visit her 9 months ago. And she just opened her doors and let me in, and we became good friends. And I thought she'd be around for a few years, and just when it became evident that she really was going to die soon, the whole impact of that hit me full force. I experienced her fear, her concern about dying alone, which was, that was one of her main issues. And just devoted myself to her last day. And a number of Sangha members here also did. And then we had a cremation ceremony, and we had the ceremony where you go into the place where they do the cremation with the big machine, and watch her body roll into the furnace. And we chanted the Heart Sutra. And she wanted that because she knew that it was such an opportunity to really get the message of the transiency of life, of this part of life that we see that is constantly being born and dying. And how can you enter into that before you die? You really can't. But if you are really close to someone else who is dying, you experience right up to that point something like that, and then you experience loss when they're gone, and then there's life. When she dies, everything lifted, and I experienced my whole being light as a feather. So I knew I had let go of her. But my own death will come, and now I know something about how to allow it and not fight with that issue and not ignore the reality of our world here, because this is the way it is for us. Tozan tries to show that there is some, the nature of reality is also us. And when we die, what dies? And who dies? And Buddha nature is always here, always in play with the transiency of life. It's like a marriage. I could see how the Hindus came up with these male and female god images, because the two sides of life are like a marriage, and they play together. And when we recognize reality in the mundane world, we can relax. And when I see that myself, it makes it a lot easier for me to be with people who are suffering, with my own suffering, with my own situation, the way, you know, with my complaints about silly things. And it allows me to stay where I am. I don't know. I talked about the Emerald Palace, which I thought was a great image that Tozan brings up as a, or it's actually such a, it's his commentary on Tozan. It's lit up by the moon, and Conrail, this dog, who is a mythological dog, really, comes out of some of the history of Japan. Conrail the dog is actually the monk who tries to sneak into the Emerald Palace and find out what's inside. He thinks enlightenment can be captured or seen. And the moonlight is the light of enlightenment, of wisdom, that shows this place. But where is this place? And because Conroe can see it outside himself, he goes inside and finds it empty and is disappointed. Traditionally, the Emerald Palace is the realm of the Absolute in the ordinary world, or as the ordinary world. And that is where Tozan says we should go looking for it. And where it is, if you look for it, is right here in your on your seat where you are now. And there is no other place to go to discover this. Which kind of is a liberating thought, because you really then do not have to travel to a monastery in Tibet and seek an enlightenment experience. And an enlightenment experience doesn't look like anything in particular, because it's all here with us now. And this is an enlightenment experience. And maybe it's not as exciting as one you had yesterday. I had one that was really humorous. I was sitting over there, and Tamara and Catherine's kitchen is over there, and they turned the fluorescent light on and off on not realizing that that window cast a light right there on the floor just a window light, and I'm staring at the floor and the light goes on. I'm happily doing zazen. And I look at the light, and then I see the most beautiful face of Buddha in the light, and I notice there's a little three-dimensionalness to it. And then I see another one. And then I see another one, and I'm starting to get fascinated. I'm having an enlightenment experience. I'm saying the Buddhas, and the word seven Buddhas before Buddhas came into my head, and I thought, oh, this is what they look like. And then the light went off. Even Tamar or Catherine
turned off the light.
And I went, uh-oh, just the floor. And I talked to Sergeant about that, because it's pretty funny. And he said, oh, you saw the movie screen. First you saw the movie, then you saw the movie screen. And he says, normally we don't get to see the movie screen. We're just seeing the movie. And we're fascinated with it. So, I at one time would have, you know, hoped for tomorrow to turn the light back on. At least till I finished my session of zazen. So, we have all kinds of experiences that seem more superior than the ordinary one. And definitely, the difficult ones are hard to view as experiences that we would want to hold on to because they hurt. I know I can see pain in people's bodies at times and know that it's so important to give your body the gift of attention like you would to someone else. I do that with my bird. My bird is called Emerald, and she needs to be talked to. So I read her Tozan's No Cold or Heat and watched her listen carefully. And then I told her about the Emerald Palace, which could be a place where she could reside in her cage. She doesn't understand a word I'm saying, but she loves to hear me talk. So, reference is made to the five ranks, which I won't talk about, but there are five perspectives on reality. And I think Tozan just wanted us to be aware of the absolute side of this mundane reality. So to be aware of it and how that happens is not something you can make happen, but through the process of practice, there's it's revealed. There, I think that in the realm of the absolute is revealed in the ordinary contact that we have with this. So it's good to be here, and it's good to stay here for as long as you can in this present reality, which can be very long. It could be really long, and I realized I lost track of time when I stopped clocking it, because I didn't have to. And my moments, if I didn't look at a clock, got to be really one thing. When I worked with Rosvita, who she has a card on the altar, she wanted to get a shortcut to realization because she didn't have much time. So I suggested to let herself get a little close to what she's feeling. And that was the hardest thing to do, to be close to not only the pain of cancer, but what was coming, and everything that's assumed about what was coming. She began to practice just being here, where she was. And she practiced diligently in her last days. And she died with very little pain and no evident anxiety at all. And I think she lost consciousness. She only was with the breath. And Sojin talked to her while she was still able to talk and taught her about the breath and staying with it. so she made that journey, riding that wave. So, how much time is left?
A lot of time.
Forever and ever.
However, the other side says 11:11.
The other side, that's mundane reality.
Extraordinarily mundane. Yes, it's 11:11.
So.
And our Sashin director may have some guidance for us now.
Where is he? Is it time?
There is time for us. Time.
I want to say that we decided that there would be no questions now because you can ask all your questions this afternoon.
That's right.
Okay.
Unless he changes his mind.
No.